eat not kosher foods, it says, "Benitamtem bom," you will become impure in them. The exact opposite of by the mitzvahs. You will live in them, now the averus, the sins, you will become impure in them. Hainu besocha mamash chas v'shom. It's like you're mamish, literally inside the averus. Shu kosher umasuba vaz baruchtum, you're totally engulfed and enveloped in a sphere of impurity. Vavira de gehenna melafafo umakifo gam be'odam chai be'olam. And the environment of Gehenim encircles you while you're alive. You're in a living hell. That's what he's saying. And that's true. It's true. You hate yourself. You know, when you get into that depression because you've done so many terrible things, it's a living hell. And that's exactly what you are at that state when you're in there. So that's the critical point. And people could feel like their lives are just destroyed. It's a living hell, and that's why people would want to commit suicide, because there's nothing to their lives, and that's what's happening over there. Okay, we can now skip till page Chav Gimel, the third paragraph, to the bold print now. Okay, we'll go to the bold print. So that was an interesting gloss. Yes, mm-hmm. Interesting gloss. All right, now we go to the next part. Now he's coming back to the main theme. Right, the main thing was you do mitzvahs. It unleashes energies above. These energies are able to come to you. You perfect your own self. So now he comes back to the theme. Bekasher kiyem kol ha-mitzvahs b'shleimus. And now if you can approach the level where you can do all the mitzvahs to perfection, right? Because you want to be totally in sync with the spiritual realm by doing all your whole body, right? So b'chol pratem v'dikdukeim, and all the particulars and all the nuances and all the conditions, be'ikr ha-masa, in the actual deed, right? If you're perfecting them in deed, you do every strictness possible, you're doing the mitzvahs, v'nosav lehem, and in addition to them, hitztoref otzem tahara sukudush samachshava, and yeah, you've combined with that the intensity and the purity of thought. So if the action is perfect and the thought is perfect, what happens? Hare tikein kol ha'olamos v'astorem elyonim. What happens is you bring correction and perfection to all the heavenly arrangements above. But not only that, the na'asa kulo, you yourself totally become the kol kochosav evorav, with all the power that you have and all the limbs that you have, you become a merkava lahem. You become a chariot to all those aspects of kedusha. What does it mean to say that you become a chariot? Because what's the purpose of a chariot? What does a chariot do? It brings something from one place to another. That's what a chariot does. Right? A human being who does all the mitzvahs becomes a chariot, becomes a transportation vehicle for bringing holiness into the world. And if you do them all, then you've got the whole spiritual sphere has been totally perfected to bring out godliness much clearer. It's a full being. It's a full potency is there. Your parts of your body and all your energies become sanctified from the upper holiness. And the honor of God is constantly hovering over the person. That's what happens. Okay, let's go a little bit ahead. I'm going to skip some side points because I want to cover some ground tonight. But Ayin Zohar Truma, let's look in the Zohar and Truma, Parshas Truma, that says, the verse that says in Isaiah, Kol anikra bishmi, everything that is called by my name, v'lichvodi barasif, I've created them all for my glory. Meaning the human has the ability through the different mitzvahs to bring in these elements of holiness into the world, and that is the honor of God. In other words, the whole point of existence is to bring God into the world, to make the world see godliness in the world. That's what it's all about. Everything is created for God's glory. Not that he's got a big ego, but to bring in the glory and the realization of God in the world. So now the Zohar explains this verse, skipping down to the brackets now. V'lichvodi barasiv, and for my honor I've created him. Who? B'davka. That's what it means. Vesoza, etc. This secret, lamadnu, we learn, kizah, covet. This is the honor. Kula niskan lamala mitocha tikunim shel b'nei ha'olam. Everything is corrected above from the corrections that the people in the world below do. Kasher b'nei ha'olam hem tzadikim v'chassidim. When people are righteous, v'yodin l'take tikunim, that know how to make those corrections that are appropriate. And he tells you to look in other sources over here. So what's happening over here is that the human being brings himself to his purpose, because that's what the human being was created for. By bringing holiness into his life, he performs the main function for which God created him in this world. And that is to bring the realization of God into the rest of the world. And therefore, when you perfect your body, you become that reflective image of godliness in the world. And that's what you were created for. And that brings out God's honor. Next paragraph is, Zeu Shom Razal, this is what our rabbis have said, Ha'avos Hein Hein Hamarkava. The patriarchs, they are the chariot. They are these transportation vehicles to bring godliness down into this world. Okay? And the truth of the matter is, as the commentaries say, everybody is their own chariot. The patriarchs are called the chariot because they brought down the most fundamental elements of God's characteristics into the world. Chesed, kindliness, din, constriction, tzimtzum. The others brought down the primary forces, the base elements, right? And we bring in our little bits that we, permutations thereof, to bring it in. But everybody is their own merkava to bring something in over here. Okay? That's very interesting what we mean by a merkava. And Rav Dessler, in his work, he gives his definition of what he means by a merkava. And he says like this. He says, for a person to be considered these kinds of chariots, these kinds of transmitting stations of spirituality. Okay? That's what it really is. He says the definition like this. He says, these are people that exist for no other purpose except for bringing the honor of God into the world. I live to bring God's honor into the world. That is a merkava. That is a chariot. In other words, all the person's actions are pure in intent, and they're all directed for the purpose to bring in God's honor. Meaning it's totally lishma, totally for the sake of God and for no ulterior motives. That is the ultimate merkava. We all got to work on that, obviously. Yeah. We all got to work on that. But the question is, why, sort of, that says, why is this my definition of that being a merkava lishchina, a merkava, a chariot for spirituality? So it's based on Reb Chaim. Because what's Reb Chaim said over here? That what we're doing is we're drawing this Kedusha into ourselves from the different sources. That's what's really happening. We're drawing in this holiness. Now, it's very interesting. You want to draw in that holiness. There's two parts to that. Number one, you've got to draw it. But number two, there's got to be a place for that holiness to rest once it gets to you. Okay, there's two parts that are happening. You're bringing in the holiness from the different worlds. So you're bringing it in, but where is it going to reside? You know, like for example, you have an apartment full of furniture. Full. Loaded to the gills. And now you go to a fancy furniture store and buy a magnificent dining room table. Okay? And you've spent the money, you've got the truck, you got the mover, you bring it to the front door, and your house is cluttered. Right? So there's no place to put in the table.
So if you don't let it flow to other people,
there's no way to get this in. So So what are you going to do? You got to make room. You got to clear out the old dining room table, clear out the old stereo, get rid of it. Now there's room for it to get in over here. So that Rav Dessler is saying that's the same thing over here. You've got to make room for that Kedusha so that when it comes into you, it has a place to stay. All right? A lot of times we could do very good activities that are bringing in Kedusha. we're doing really good mitzvahs. And this is where it answers the question. Rabbi, I'm doing a lot of mitzvahs. I don't feel any of this that you're saying. People say this. Rabbi, I did a lot of mitzvahs. Oh, you're talking about an aura. You're talking about this. Talking about charity. I don't know what you're talking about. Right? But the question is, have we created the space for those mitzvahs, that kedusha, to come into you? You haven't made yourself the chariot yet. You've brought it in. You did a mitzvah. It's bringing it in. But where is it sticking? You're full. There's no merkava. There's no chariot to fit it in. Right? So he's saying the merkava, this chariot for the wholeness, is accomplished by that person who's, what cleans you out, so to speak, is when you define that your life existence is nothing else but this. To bring God's holiness into the world. That cleans out and leaves lots of room. When you say, everything I'm doing is to bring God's holiness into the world, what are we really saying? Get rid of the ego. The ego fills your apartment. Okay? If you are all taking up the apartment, there's no room for God to get in. So I'm doing the mitzvah because I love it. It makes me feel great. You know, it's the I. If it's all the I's, why do I do it? Because I. So then where's room to catch into you? Where's godliness going to be reflected off of you if it's all you? Right? So the lines of Kedusha might be open, right? But the problem is the person's at full capacity, he's got no way to take it in. It's, what do they say? No vacancies. Right? There's no room for it to come in. So that's why people can do a lot of mitzvahs, don't get much out of it. Doesn't mean to say the rest of the world isn't benefiting. You're bringing in the energies that helps the whole world. But what's it doing for me? It's not doing very much if you're not prepared to have it to open up and to allow. It's because I'm trying to bring in God's presence into the world. And to the degree that your presence is there, it limits God's presence to come into the world, and you won't feel those kinds of energies over there. So that's what he means when the patriarchs were the Merkava. They were perfect Merkava. Totally dedicated for that purpose. So now we have to work to the degree that we can work on it. To that degree, we'll be a chariot, and we'll be able to reflect. There'll be times we'll reflect more than others. Right, so whatever you can be a merkava for is wonderful, and there's what to strive for and what to live for to continue to grow in that direction. Okay, that's what he's saying about the merkava. Let's read a little bit further. It says, I'll try to finish this chapter. And the opposite as well, God forbid. So if he will flaw his powers and his body parts through a sin, asher chata, which he sins, gam kein habgam magia lefishrusha laoisaha elyam vakoicha elyam amachuvah negdo besidri asher kom kivyachol. You will now, since you're a microcosm of the whole world, that flaw will go all the way to the roots of all the spiritual worlds that parallel your own microcosm of spirituality to this structure of the higher world. And will do lahorso ulachrivo chas v'shalom. It will destroy it. It doesn't literally mean to destroy it, but it's going to affect it very negatively. It can't destroy it. O laharido, it will lower that world's ability to perform. It will not be able to output in its highest expression. O lafogma, will flaw it, which not necessarily means a lowering of the level, but in its level, it isn't performing to its highest degree. It's not working to capacity. These are different nuances that we have no idea what one nuance means differently in the spiritual realm. Ola hachshik, or to darken, ola hakdin, or to make small, tziktzu achora, the additional shine, ola hatish, and to weaken, ola hachli shalomayet kocha taras kedushoso, to weaken all this holiness, chas v'shalom. Hakol kifi erech hachet v'afeni asiyos, it all depends on what you did and how you do it, ukvi erech minyan oso ola megova madregoso, and depending where that world is. And how far away that world is from you. Meaning to say, as he's going to explain in the next paragraph, what you do can only go so far. And the closer the world, the more will be affected. The further away the world, the less will be affected, because your reach only goes so far. So the next paragraph says, Kilo kol olamos shavu b'shiurim b'inyan hapgav v'kikul. Not every world, not all the worlds are equal in terms of how much flaw and damage you can create. Shibetachton, that in a lower world, uharisa v'churban rachmas, it could be tremendous damages. Ulamal, in a higher up world, minias or, limit some light. Uva'elyon yosermen, in a higher one, goyim rakismatu shifas orakton, so it will reduce how much flow will come out. Uva'yoser gavov, and now it goes higher and higher, will be even less of a dent. Goyim rakismatu spagodol tzichtzuach orav, and taras kedushonim flow, will only take away a little of the extra added splendor that it would have, less of an impact. V'chayin arabas b'chayin ashanas, different levels. The higher, further away, the less impact you're going to have on all these levels. Mm-hmm. Which is very interesting. Again, you kind of feel, well, this is way beyond my league, and it's hard to understand. So, but there is a very important insight over here, because there is a very important concept in Judaism that says, which we all know about, that there's a morsel of holiness that every Jew possesses, which is called in the terminology the Besulat Yisrael, literally the Virgin Israel, Virgin Territory, meaning to say no matter what happens, there always remains an untouched, untainted bit of holiness within every Jew. Okay, and this Besulat Yisrael, this Virgin Territory, is the highest form of holiness. No matter what a Jew does, he can't reach that domain. It's so far up, right? And since it can't be reached, the Jew is ultimately connected to some very deep root of holiness that preserves the soul of the Jewish people. Now, it almost sounds paradoxical. A Jew can do every single thing in the book, the worst things, right? And the highest form of sanctity remains untouched. It seems like a paradox, but that's the whole point. The highest form of Kedusha are the most deeply buried potentials within the Jew. Okay? The energies at the lower levels, you know, they don't have to be buried so much, and they can be much more easily accessible. Right? But the more precious the thing becomes, the deeper it's buried. That potential is buried so deeply within the composite soul of the Jewish people, it can never be touched in a negative way. And therefore, this explains all these phenomena. It explains the phenomena of the Baal Tshuva, right? The Baal Tshuva, where on the surface, after many years, he's totally destroyed everything that's on the surface, right? But then what's under the surface, if it ever is able to give off its expression, right? That's the holiest parts that they can be tapped into. Now, how they're tapped into is another story. In other words, I can't damage it. How do I tap into it? Other chapters will talk how you can tap into it and how that comes into being. But that means the person always has hope to do tshuva. You always have hope to do tshuva because you've never really hit the highest world of what represents the source where you come from. And therefore, this most hidden spark of holiness, which is the collective holiness of the Jewish people, okay, not necessarily as individuals, but as a collective whole, which we find ourselves is in the highest places. This is what is the assurance for the eternity of the Jewish people as well. Yeah. That's why the collective Jewish people can never be destroyed. Right? Because the deepest holiness of the Jewish people as a nation is buried in the highest of worlds. No matter what we do, we can't destroy those points. They're too far out of our reach to destroy. And it's at those points of almost total destruction of the Jewish people, God, so to speak, dips into that resource of that highest world to save the Jewish people. Okay, even though we've lost every other level, right? The salvation that comes from that core soul level. That's way beyond what we can touch. And God dips into that, so to speak, to save the Jewish people. That's what an important idea. There are worlds we can't touch. It's to our benefit sometimes. Mm-hmm. That we can't touch them. Okay, he's going to explain how he dips into them later on. If we can't affect it up, how does it come down? He's going to talk about that. But right now, that's a critical thing. There's always effort you can't destroy.
But when we do a good thing, then we affect the highest of them, right? when we do the bad thing doesn't affect it?
Or not necessarily. We'll have to wait for the second gate because it's almost a what do you call it? It goes back and forth, kind of idea, where one brings the other. So we have to wait on that. But you definitely, to what we understand, the worlds that you can hit, you are hitting. And the lower ones you're hitting stronger. Exactly how it works, it's a very interesting process. And unfortunately, he saves it to the end of the second gate. Somehow he always says it's going to be later and later, but one day we'll come to the laters, I promise you. But that's the idea that he brings out over here.
So this is the root soul of the collective.
Yeah. That's part of it. It's very high up, and you cannot damage that. It's undamageable. It's the sheer will for our existence. That's what it is. God's sheer will for our existence, and that can never be destroyed. You can't destroy that. You could have our existence theoretically could be destroyed. Theoretically, our existence, but it's rooted in the sheer will of God. That's part of our soul that we should not be destroyed. So, you know, he's going to discuss this later on, but that's what he's saying here. I don't want to get too much into it because we don't have enough material to deal with it.
If we had reached the 49th level, would that be the only thing that saved us?
That's right. That's what saved us. If we would have gone one step further, we would have needed major spiritual surgery on our spiritual chemistry to have been saved. But we couldn't have been saved the way we were. So let's just finish up these last short paragraph and we'll be done with this chapter. This is what our rabbis have said in many places. Lithgam ha'avon pgam ikonin shel melech. It says the flaw of an avera is like when you do an avera, not only are you like flawing the mitzvah, but it's like you're putting flaw into a bust of the king. You know, like a bust, you know, a portrait, a likeness of the king. When you do an avera, it's like you're putting a mark, like you're taking an ink thing and splattering it right in the picture of the king. That's like when you're doing an avera. That's how the mystical people talk about this. Uba Zohar Yisro, and in the Zohar in Yisro, skip a couple lines to the brackets. Umishum kach, therefore, misha poshea b'mitzvah satorah. Someone who rebels against the mitzvahs of the Torah. Shaposha b'guf ha-melech. It's like you've rebelled against the body of the king. The Yatsu, Kemosha Kosov, as the text says, the Yatsu Vro, they went out and saw Befigre Haposhin B. The people saw, talking about people who went against God. So what did they see? So they saw the Pigre, the carcasses of those who were Haposhin B, who did crimes against me, says God. Not against my laws. But it's against be mamish, me, actually me, you've rebelled against. Okay? Oy lechayavim ha'ovrim al divrei Torah, woe to those people who are guilty for transgressing the Torah, v'lo yodi mahemosi. They don't even know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even realize that they're splattering ink all over the picture of the king.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, so to speak, hitting the king. The next bracket, v'chol misha pasha b'mitzvah, someone who transgresses in the mitzvah, ki will pasha b'diyokan shel melech. It's like he's hitting, slapping the image of the king. Kiniskel, as we said, shapagam. Because why? What's happening? Shapagam, that this flaw, it's not just a flaw in yourself. It's not just a flaw for your own spiritual being. But nimshach b'nogea b'pirkei v'sidrei hakochas v'lamos asher koma. It reaches the highest spheres of the macro person of the universe. You're damaging the arm of the macro universe that would be the thing that could project godliness in the world. Why? Because misat shekulam nichluluba. Because they're all included in man. Man has a little bit of everything in the world, and that's his connection on the mini level, right? I think like the voodoo doll is the best parable. You know, Who knows? This little image, you poke pins and it hurts the big person too. It's almost that voodoo doll image of what you've done to the much greater macro universe. Because all of them are in you. V'nasnu chelik matzmusa, they gave part of themselves, b'vinyan of riyasu, in your creation. So what are you doing? You are destroying these worlds. Which means you're destroying the vehicle for the revelation of godliness in the world. These worlds are the tools of the vehicle to express godliness in the world, right? You're taking away the sustenance of God which sustains them, right? So when you're pulling out of God's revelation from the world, it's almost as if you've heard him. In other words, the holiest God wants to put energies into the world. He wants to flow energy into the world. And it's up to us what we do. And if we go and do our verse, what are we saying? It's like you're slapping in the face. I don't need your energies. I don't need your energies. I don't want your energies. I'm not into what you have to offer me. I'm not interested in you coming down into this world. Thanks, but no thanks. It's not going to happen. So you're telling God to get out of here. That's what you're really doing. Because God can't come in without your permission. It's like, I don't want you in here. So it's as if you are giving up a slap in the face. Because that's exactly how God wants to project himself. Is that you shut the door in his face. I don't want to see you. Goodbye. We don't realize that. We don't realize that that is what really is happening in everything we do. And just the two lines in the gloss now make a very nice understanding here. This is the simple meaning of the text. When God said, Na'ase Adam, let us make man. Right? That's what it says in the Torah. Let us make man. Who's God talking to? Let us make man. What does it mean, let us make man? So what does the Rashi there say? Rashi says, God asked the angels for permission, so to speak, right? to teach us humbleness, that even if you're a great judge, you know what, you should ask other people. So God say, okay guys, should I do it or not? Okay, let us make man. That's Rashi, which is fine, but now it's much deeper than this. Nasa Adam, Lush and Rabin, the plural tense, Rutzel, I mean to say, Shekulam, that all of the different worlds, they were all created already. Right? God created all these different levels of existence. So now what does God say? Let us make man. Yitnu koach v'chilek b'vinyano. I want all of you worlds, all you spiritual entities, to give a little bit of yourself to create this man. She'kolol u'meshutaf mikulam. That he should now be incorporated in all of them, as it says in the Zohar. And that's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what it means. Let us make man. Let all these different parts of the world make man. Okay, next week, this was a difficult chapter. This is probably one of the more difficult ones you'll have. If you've stuck around this far, sailing gets a lot smoother. Okay, so chapter 7, he's going to finally answer the question. What was the question? The question was, how is man the soul of the universes? Remember he said it can't be the same way as a body is to a soul, because that's simultaneous. Remember how the soul and the body, it's a simultaneous. And we know it's not the same, because when man says Kedusha, the angels say Kedusha later. And therefore, he had started with the model of, you have a soul here, you got a Shorash Neshama above. And that's the top of everything. Then he's now thrown in a whole new thing with man being a micro-universe. He's saying every element of the universe gave a little bit of itself to make the creation of man. Okay, it's come out, he said two different aspects now. He's talked about the idea that, well, man is really sourced at the very top. And since it's at the very top, that everything filters down from that. To which he says, well, if that's the case, he's really the soul of the whole world. So why isn't everything we do simultaneous to what happens to the rest of the world? So he didn't really answer that yet. So he says, well, it can't mean that. And now he's digressed this whole thing that we're a little microchip of all these elements that are within ourselves. So now, what do we do with all this information? Right now we're at information overload. Now, how do we hold these two ideas? We have a soul and a root soul. Right? The telecommunication system. We go all the way to the top. It's on top of the first act of creation, pre-creation thought. We're there. And we're way on the top, which is a world, which is a soul to the body, etc., all the way down. On the other hand, we're a microcosm of every bit that's every way along the way. So now which one is it?
Both.
Okay, that's the Jewish answer. All right, but well, how do we apply both?
Because like when you're doing the Kedusha, and you're praying, you have the opportunity, since God is not in a time frame, either are all the patriarchs or matriarchs in the time frame either. So when you're praying, you have the opportunity to connect with every patriarch, with every matriarch at the same time.
Yeah, but it's still not explaining why the malachim are delayed.
Maybe that's why the eagle doesn't necessarily have any automatic ability to something negative to actually do the action, in order to provide you with that time of...
Well, that just that could be true, but it doesn't answer why the mechanism here is working as such.
You need the opportunity to struggle with the evil that would otherwise commit.
Okay, so we will talk. So chapter 7 resolves it, and then gets into the whole idea of God shadowing our actions, which then leads into a fascinating discussion of the cherubim in the Mishkan. Fascinating discussion of the cherubim in the Mishkan, which gives a lot of insight as to how God reflects our activities and what mirror image God gives us. And you might as well think as well, you know, the famous question, you know, you're not allowed to have graven images, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the cherubim, are graven images. So why are they allowed? So you know what the answer is. Well, if God says it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a good answer. I mean, it's an answer. But that's not an answer. Right? Yeah, yeah. If graven images. In other words, God says you shouldn't have a graven image. And now here's the graven, God says, but if I say it, it's okay. Right, it's like, you know, because
times.
Why? Because I said so. Okay, so we will see. Yeah, but this is different. This is different. This is right on. This is exactly what God said not to do. God says do. Here it's one against another. Here's a mitzvah, it's not fair. Okay, what do I do? So God, I got rules. Positive push off a negative. God says don't make graven images. By the way, make a graven image. Right? Make a graven image. Right? That's a big problem. And he's also going to, the next couple of chapters are just really fascinating. He's going to get you into the idea of how much time one has to study Torah as opposed to work. He's going to get into all these things. So the next 2 weeks will be very, very practical. I hope we try to make this practical all along, but you kind of get lost up in the spheres sometimes. But it's going to get very practical as he answers this question and how he'll get into Simcha. And if you've stuck out this long, now it gets to much more smoother sailing. Talk about who's better, angels or man. Then he's going to get to the three levels of soul. Once we got past chapter 6, we can breathe. We'll be able, if you've made it this far, it's been worth the wait.
I have a question. Isn't there something somewhere that a Jew who doesn't fast on Yom Kippur is cut off from the Jewish people?
It's Kares. Kares, sure, Kares.
So you're not keeping Shabbat.
Well, how does that relate to the whole concept of the Jewish soul and the United
States? Okay, so what we will find out, is that you're not totally cut off. And the real answer is going to come in about chapter 15 or 16, but next week I'll give you a little taste of that answer.
The Shema,
I'll give you a taste of that answer. I'm going to give you a real beautiful, I'll give you some homework. I'm going to give you one piece of homework, okay? The homework is study Leviticus chapter 19, verses 8 and 9. Just make sure you know those two verses. And it talks about the mitzvah of leaving over a corner of your field. I'm going to give you the Or HaChaim's mystical interpretation of that mitzvah.
Chapter
Leviticus, chapter 19,
Rashi,
verse 8 and 9.
Rashi have it?
Okay. Just know it. Just read it. Read it and understand what the words mean. So when I say it, like, we can just go from that point. And I'll share with you. How many of you can really read Hebrew good? Like, okay, I'll give you a copy of it. We'll go through it, but I'll speak it out in English. Or Chaim mystically explains your question. This is your question of Kares, Karen. Right? I give Westbound people partiality. So, we'll discuss, we'll just start talking about it. I'm not going to talk about the mechanics. This mechanics is chapter 16. But the idea we'll talk that you, the truth is you're never utterly cut off. You might be on the ropes, but you're not utterly cut off, and we'll see how that fits in as well. It comes into the next chapter. Okay.
Thank you.
Have a good week, and next week we'll go on.